And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Oh, it's Friday already, and how are you, everybody? Welcome aboard the John Gambling Show with our Friday guest, Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Going to be a great weekend, but hot.
Hot indeed.
They say 85 today, 90 tomorrow, 95 on Sunday. Lots of water.
Sounds like golf weather to me.
Stay out of it. You could work into Father's Day with my daughters. Going to the Mets game tonight with one daughter.
I'm going to ask you about your daughters and Father's Day.
One daughter with boyfriend to the Mets game tonight. Another daughter with husband. Maybe we might see each other on a golf course.
Good for you.
And but it'll be a nice weekend. But seriously, you got to stay out of the sun, and it'd be a good time, particularly Saturday and Sunday when it's very hot. Stop by one of your neighbors if they're elderly or infirmed, and just check in on them, because it's easy to get dehydrated, and some people don't have air conditioning and don't recognize that they're getting overheated, and it's a good time just to show. You know, it reminds me of yesterday was talking. We have the group from the Democratic National Convention.
You're squaring them around.
Yeah, I had breakfast with them, dinner last two nights, and breakfast again today. And I was talking to him about Houston, Texas. I met the mayor of Houston. He was in town last week. I think we talked about him.
Yeah, Bill White.
Bill White. It's a good memory. He came up to see how we build affordable housing. It's very flattering that people would come from around the country to watch us. But Houston, Texas is a city where the people of Houston really deserve a thank you, I think, from all Americans. They've taken in something like 150,000 people from Katrina, from New Orleans, who are still there. They provide them with housing and schools.
And probably will stay there.
You know, some will. Some will go back. That's a problem for New Orleans, mm-hmm. is that people don't come back. But the people of Houston have, you know, sucked it up and done what you'd like to think we all would do.
You would hope so.
Yeah. I mean, and I said to this group last night, we really should all say thank you to the people of Houston and the mayor. He seems like a good guy. And then I ran into him last weekend at a restaurant here. He stayed through the weekend, so I ran into him having dinner on Sunday night.
Why would you want to be anywhere but New York City?
And can why would he want to spend his money? I mean, we need the sales tax revenue.
Let me ask you a question. Metro section, New York Times article about the city considering centers where those day laborers that gather on street corners might be. You know,
the administration, along with Christine Quinn, the great speaker. I think she was going to turn out to be great too, incidentally. Speaker of the City Council. Other cities do it. I think we certainly should look at it. You know, you're dealing with a group of people who, many of whom probably are undocumented, and that is a problem. On the other hand, there is a market out there. There are people who want to work, and there are people who want to employ them, and it might make more sense to have a place where everybody could meet rather than on street corners throughout the city. I don't know that that's, you know, given all the alternatives, I would prefer if we didn't have any undocumented people. You know, my position, we should be giving everybody citizenship, but a legit green card, or ID, whatever you want to call it. We need these people. If you look, unemployment in this city this month, I'm happy to report, just fell to an 18-year low. Now, the people that don't like me and don't like our administration, I don't know how they're going to turn this into a bad story. They will try, but the truth of the matter is unemployment rate has continued to come down. It went from 5.4 to 5.0. Nationwide, I think it's around 4.6. Given we have a big immigrant community in inner city, 5.0 is pretty impressive. But what that also says is unless you have an influx of new workers, you start to have inflation. And the birth rate in America is not high enough to produce enough workers down the road to take care of you and me when we retire. Social Security is not – there's no fund. They don't have some money put away. That's all fiction. They have to – it's sort of a robbing Peter to pay Paul or a Ponzi scheme.
You mean there's not a big bank account somewhere?
There is not. There's this notational thing, but I'm sorry. There is not a savings account for Social Security. We need people working and paying in Social Security money, and those will be paid to retirees. And if there ever is a day when there isn't enough, who's ever left – it's like musical chairs. When the music stops – there's going to be a real problem
with this clearinghouse.
So that's why we need
for day laborers.
Right.
They would then become somewhat legitimized, if you will.
Well,
if you understand what I'm saying.
I understand that, John. And
I'm talking about economics now. I'm not talking about immigration at all here. But wouldn't they then become a higher paid group of people, and that there would be those that will sneak in underneath to accomplish the same thing that they're doing now?
Depends how you do it. Nobody's talking about violating federal laws and creating our own ID or anything. This is simply, if they're going to congregate on three street corners, wouldn't it make more sense to have them congregate on one street corner or in a hall or someplace or other? Just because nobody likes to have on their corner people driving by and people standing there. You can say this is some people would argue, don't fix this problem because we want it to get so bad that we'll fix a bigger problem. Well, mayors don't deal in big problems. We deal in problems every day. And I think that the federal government should fix the immigration problem. But in the meantime, I've got to deal with it. And I don't know that we're going to do this, but it's certainly something worth looking at. You read in the papers more out in Nassau County and Suffolk County.
Sure, where I live. There's
and up in Westchester. Here, the city's so big you don't see it. But it takes place here as well. You know, undocumented, nowhere to go. And people looking to hire them, nowhere to go to find them. And this argument that they work dramatically cheaper, I think most of the studies don't show that. 75% of them, of the undocumented, a number like that, pay Social Security and pay taxes and never take any benefits because you can't. There's no ways to send them back the money. The numbers that they use typically are fraudulent. But this argument that they cost society a lot of money doesn't hold water from an economic point of view. And the fact that they work less, some work less, but there's an awful lot of them who are very hardworking, and they're in demand. And as our economy keeps growing, and if the birth rate didn't pick up, and you have to do that way in advance, you know you're going to need more employees, so the employees can drive a better bargain.
And in this conversation, as you just said, it comes back to the federal government and the whole immigration plan.
Which we've talked about, and you know, you got to do something about it.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to do something about it. I wish Washington understood that as well as you and I seem to. Let's take a break. We'll come back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg in just a moment at 77 WABC. WABC. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at 77 WABC. I was surprised at the Port Authority Chairman Anthony Socia's comments this week.
Kosher. He's a good guy, actually.
About the fact that maybe the Freedom Tower deal needs to be relooked at because who's going to go?
I think, can't guarantee it yet, but we really are making progress at getting leases from government agencies that will take a big percentage, if not all, of the Freedom Tower.
So you think you're talking like a 75-plus percent of the building?
I think there's a very good chance of that. I can't tell you we have signed agreements. The governor's really been the point man and doing, a good job. And, you know, he's got to deliver. But when I had a meeting with him yesterday, and he said that we're close. And he's committed to put state employees there. I've committed to put some city employees in some of the other buildings, not in the Freedom Tower, but other buildings over there on the World Trade Center site, which will help the economics of that.
All right. Yesterday, you and the governor were down talking about the memorial and resizing, redesigning.
Well, the real focus is on making it more affordable. I think everybody would like to stay with Michael Arad's design that was picked by this panel that was very open, democratic, represented all segments of the community. They did an enormous amount of work, gave an enormous amount of their time. They picked this design. Of the last, I didn't see all the designs, there were thousands submitted. Of the last three or four, I did think this was my favorite. And they didn't ask me in the final vote. I had testified much earlier, but I said to Patty Harris, you know, of all of them, that's the one that I would pick. And she said that was the one that she had supported as well, because I thought it was simple. The trees weren't there then. That's a great addition. The landscape architect's a guy named Walker, and he really has done a good job. And ARAD's design is good. And the question is, how do you do that and make it affordable? And so the discussions weren't really about changing design as much as are there ways to build it more efficiently? If you moved something slightly from here to there, if you came in a different direction, if you had more or less of one attribute or another. And Frank Siami, who
did a little value engineering.
Hey, listen, this is a guy pro bono.
$100 million, right?
Pro bono did a lot of work. He's giving us a final report, I think, this coming week.
Oh, yeah, not the report. I thought
haven't.
You
had. No, I mean, okay. We had a briefing from him. But you know, you want to make sure that we go over it and give it some thought. Look, we have to build a memorial, and we have to build and the scope of that. Everybody, I think, believes that. You want to tell the story. You want to look to the future. A variety of things. There's constituents that you want to. A lot of different parties here that have an interest. Families and the city. There's economic interest. There's memorial interest. There's patriotism issues. And pulling that all together is hard. So we all want a memorial. The commitment was made very early that we would not build on the footprints, and that I don't think anybody wants to re-go and revisit that. That was a commitment made, and you have to live with that. There was a commitment, I understand, made to preservationist group in the federal government about some other things. I'm not so sure that I think that's a great idea or that we should, but I think it's worth – we have to look at it. And if we have a commitment, we'll live with the commitment. So within those constraints, you then have to come up with something. Trying to stick with ARAD's design, Frank's done a lot of work, and we'll hopefully find a ways to bring the cost down to what we said, $500 million. Keep in mind –
You better start at about $450 because if you want to keep it under $500,
the cost
by the time
of
done,
construction is going up 1 or 2% a month.
A month, I know.
I mean, I just, you know, in the school system, we're building schools. The bids are coming back much higher than they were than before. If the state had given us money earlier, we could have gotten more on the ground.
Speaking of money, this week the state let some Liberty bonds for the buildings down there. $1.5 billion. The city put almost $1 billion worth up. I understand that you have been writing some letters to insurance companies for Silverstein.
Well, I mean, hopefully we can all get together without having a big public fight. A couple of the insurance companies, and there are many because the original policy was syndicated through a number of insurance companies, said, well, if Silverstein is the developer but not the owner, then that violates the covenants or the agreements and the insurance, and we don't have to pay. Number one, I think when push comes to shove,
they're still balking them.
They're not. Let us say they have a responsibility to reduce their costs, and they're trying, but we have a responsibility to make sure we get paid. I'm convinced this will work out. You can restructure the deal. If they want to be a stickler for detail, we can restructure the deal to do that. It's not going to wind up in court, I don't think. I wrote a letter yesterday to the insurance companies. I think Governors Pataki and Corzine either did or are going to, just to urge them to let's get together. I think it's one of these technical things, and I'm still optimistic we will get these buildings going. We will get the memorial going. We'll fill the buildings. It'll take some time, but better to have the space rather than keep this construction site for a long time. In the meantime, I don't care where you go downtown. This downtown's booming.
If the insurance companies do balk, however, and
you just change the deal until they can't balk.
Okay, but let me.
Nobody's going to walk away from billions of dollars, and they're not going to get away with not paying.
Doesn't it slow the whole project down, though? Don't you get into that trap?
Yes. Look, the real we live in a litigious society. You can always sue. But there's some public pressure here, too. I don't know that any of these insurance companies want to stand up and say, I'm going to be responsible for slowing down a memorial to 2,800 people, a memorial to an attack on freedom and democracy. That's not good for their business either, so.
Okay, so a little friendly.
Well, but you know, what the trouble here is that in the public domain, everybody looks at this and says, oh, this is terrible. Private world, this goes on all the time, and you just don't see it in the paper, and you work it out, and it will get worked out. We don't need everybody jumping in and inflaming the situation. I don't need every other elected official trying to, you know, go after the insurance companies. We'll work it out. The governor is on top of this. I'm on top of it. And if they don't work it out, there's always that possibility, too. Then you go to court, but we're working on it.
All right. We're working on it, too. More with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We're going to take our half-hour break. This portion of the program brought to you by the Trap.
77 WABC.
We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling and you at 77 WABC. Some numbers here, smoking in New York ticking up slightly.
It's within the margin of error. It certainly has stopped going down, and that's worrisome.
The reason I even bring it up is, did you see that the city of brotherly love is banning smoking, Philadelphia?
I don't mean to overstate
You started a trend.
I don't mean to. There are now 12 countries, including Ireland and Italy, that have banned smoking. There are
amazing that the Italians
and they're doing it. You tell us what, people don't want to die, and you know we can. Some people go crazy. They say, "Oh, it doesn't. There's no evidence." Let's get serious. When we can talk person to person, that's just total bull. You walk into a smoke-filled bar, and 20 minutes later, your blood chemistry has measurably changed. The only advice, if no matter how much you think smoking doesn't hurt, and no matter how much you don't think the government should be, don't let your kid go to work in a bar where they smoke. My test is always with my police commissioner, is it safe? Ray, would you let your son work there? That's the answer.
When he says no, that's
as good a test as any. Tom Frieden, the health commissioner, would you let your kid work there? If he says no, then you have to do something. But that's – you got to get it down to not just numbers, to real people. And anyway.
Speaking of health of municipal employees, I know that for a bunch of years now you have been concerned that municipal employees that go off work on disability have the right to sue the city, and that you wanted that changed. It looked as though that you and others that it was going to happen, but this week in the assembly, Shelley Silver put the brakes on it.
Well, I don't know. I think technically Shelley probably isn't on that committee. The committee voted against it. You can look and see who you want to blame. The issue is the following. In the private sector, if you win a judgment, your disability payment gets offset against the judgment. You don't get two payments. In the public sector, the way state law is written, you get two payments. And the theory is the trial lawyers like that because they can say, look, I'm really bringing more value. If it's offset, the incremental value isn't that much, and people wouldn't hire as many trial lawyers. Whether that's behind any of this, I have no idea. We did think that this is something
You're
that should be changed,
surprised.
And I still do.
But, you know, so be it.
So be it.
So be it. But, I mean, we are stopped in something that – on the surface, any reasonable person would say that's not fair.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, the opponents would say they're reasonable, too. Okay. I mean, I was with an assemblyman last night who was violently against charter schools, went on and on about charter schools are a terrible idea. I said to him, look, it's the people you represent are the ones that want to go to charter schools. How can you be? Well, we shouldn't take the best students that want to go to these charter schools out. I said, wait a second, you really want to force those kids to stay in other schools? Why shouldn't they have a right to do better if they can? And our job is to make all the schools better, but, there's two sides to all these things. What you and I think is reasonable is correct. What they think is reasonable is wrong, but having said that, they still have a right to their opinions.
While we're on legal issues here, your reaction to the Supreme Court yesterday, a 5-4 decision that you don't have to knock on the door. The police.
Yeah, I haven't read it. I want to talk to Cardozo about it, but it's that the court's job is to decide what the law says, and if you don't like the law, call your legislature at the city, state, or federal level and try to change the law.
All right. More lawyer stuff here. Four category cases: medical malpractice, sidewalk trips and falls, motor vehicle accidents, police actions. The lawsuits against New York City rise.
No, they're actually that stories are wrong. What we've tried to do is to settle a whole bunch of old cases that have been sitting around
forever.
So you're
suggesting the actual numbers are not going up?
I got to check the actual numbers. One of the things that is coming down is the size of awards from juries and the size of awards that judges let stand, and that's been a nationwide trend for a number of years now. Now, people that want to rile against trial, the tort lawyers don't ever want to hear that, but that is true. What we've tried to do is to settle a lot of cases that have been against the city for a very long time, and we settle cases where we think that the jury is likely to award an enormous amount against us. That's a decision you have to make all the time. I don't know whether we're going to win or lose, but if we lose, we'll have $10 million judgment against us or $100 million judgment, and depends on where it is, which courts. Everybody's got a different view of that. On the other hand, you could settle it for $100,000. Now, do you give $100,000 or do you run the risk of losing $100 million? Everybody says, oh, stand tough. And in my company, we're reasonably tough. But I'm playing with the taxpayers' money, and that's why you have very good lawyers, and you listen to their judgment. And then if it's really proving a point, then you fight it because there's something more important than money. If it's just another in a series of suits against the city, which happen all the time in the real world, then you make those decisions. And I don't think the numbers are going up, but a lot of what you see is settling old cases. I'm determined that when I leave office in another 3.5 years, I'm not going to leave my successor with a whole bunch of unsettled suits. I'm sure there'll be some, but I'd like to clean up the books and make it.
You'll be running for the presidency.
I won't be running for president in 3.5 years. They will have a new president. Have absolutely no idea who it's going to be, other than it's pretty. It's not going to be
sure
me.
It's going to be you. Huh?
I don't think we have to worry about that. I plan to finish out 3.5 years and go into philanthropy. I don't know why I can't convince everybody. Although I will say, all of the joking, all the speculation. You know, I send some of these articles to my mother, and she's probably pretty.
Well, it has to be good for the ego. I mean, to have.
Oh, anybody that says that when somebody says you should be president, if they don't get a smile on their face, that person ought to see a shrink if they don't think, oh, isn't that flattering, and get a smile on their face. Of course you do. Having said that, I love my job. I've said I'm going to finish it. I know exactly what I'm going to do next. And, you know, and when you joke about it, then the press picks up, oh, he's leaving an opening. You know, come on.
Okay. Yesterday.
Given all my views, I don't know that there's any chance that you...
On the national level that...
And George Weber had some people. One woman said, no way.
So, yeah, but most of them said yes. I think New Yorkers would love to see you do exactly
well,
that.
Well, if you could win in New York, that's fine. But it happens to be 49 other states.
Well, don't worry about those. We'll take care of that. Cabbies were before the TLC yesterday looking for a $1.50 boost surcharge for gasoline. Your position on that?
Well, we just did give cabbies a raise about a year or so ago. I do want to talk to Fernando Mateo, who represents a lot of these guys. Everybody's costs are higher. Taxis, if you look at them, my recollection is that compared to other cities, taxis are a bargain here. Having said that, they are expensive for some people, and you want to make sure the right balance is to find that level where being a taxi driver is attractive enough so that there's lots of cabs on the street. If it's unattractive, the cabs sit in the garage. That doesn't help the public. On the other hand, you don't want rates to be higher than that because then the public's paying too much. It's letting capitalism find that balance.
And there seems no shortage of demand for medallions when they are made available.
Right, so Bloomberg News had a story this morning, I think it was, that they've outperformed stocks and bonds, taxi medallions. They've done very well.
Almost everything's outperformed stocks and bonds in the last couple of weeks. So
I think it's been done before that.
That's not too tough. There was a story that disappointed me, and I have it on my list here to ask you about. A study that found that 21% of New Yorkers volunteered for things in their world, in their neighborhood, one of the lowest percentages of big cities. And that disappointed me because I was of the opinion that we had become a more community.
Yeah, I would think so too. You got to look at the science behind these numbers and how you really measure it and what the group is.
Because I think New Yorkers and you know people that live in the tri-state area really, really get down and
absolutely,
dirty.
Absolutely, whether it's writing checks or putting their time or their wisdom and contributing that. New York is a pretty generous group.
I mean,
of
there are marches with 50,000 people every weekend.
Right.
Just about.
I mean, I just you know, you want to take a look and say congratulations and thank you, people of Houston. Come back to that. I'm just amazed. I just think of what would happen if we had to house and educate and feed and find jobs for 150,000 more people. We got enough problems doing it for the people that live here. But if you're called to do it, to help another city, you got to do it, and Houston did.
All right, we had a hurricane preparedness drill, I think, didn't we, this week or end of last week?
I think we were very close to putting out our hurricane. I think it might be scheduled this coming week or the week after. I've been through it with the Office of Emergency Management. It is extensive. We train. We've done tabletops. We marshal the equipment. I think that we are as prepared.
What is a tabletop?
You go through the motions of, okay, you say, for example, to the MTA, we need buses right away to evacuate people from a low-lying area. Where are the buses? How are you going to get the drivers? What do you do with the routes that they normally cover? If they're up in the Bronx and you need them out in the Rockaways, how long is it going to take to get there? And you try to test and say, are you really sure you can get them there in that length of time? Another kind of testing is you actually marshal equipment and make sure that the radios work together and they can cooperate. And we have the fire department will be a big part of this. They will check senior homes and help with hospitals. The police department will go door to door. The MTA is going to provide transportation for people that can't drive their own cars. Radio, TV are going to be called on to help us get out the message. The good thing about a hurricane is you really do have some time generally. If it's a Category 1 storm in Florida, chances are it's not going to be a big problem. If it's a Category 3 or 4 storm in Florida, we're going to start watching that very carefully. And 24 hours earlier or maybe even more, we're going to start moving people out. And you can say, oh, my goodness, what happens? You move them out, and then the hurricane veers out to sea, and we look at the damage to the economy. Yeah, that's one of the risks. That's
what cost of doing business.
Yeah, I'm going to make the decision. We are not going to play games with people's lives. You can't move people out for any time of the storm, and there can always be, you know, a pop-up thunderstorm today, and it creates a tornado, and you can't predict that. So there's always some of that. But Joe Bruno, who runs the commissioner,
His biggest fear? What's the thing that he has least control over that is a true possibility? Is it the winds and the windows blowing out of the
With
building?
The hurricanes?
Yeah.
No. As a matter of fact, the big damage in hurricanes is from water. That's what happened in New Orleans, too, incidentally. The dikes. Difference between us and New Orleans, there the water poured in and couldn't get out. In us, you'll have flooding, but as the tide goes out and the storm goes, the water will be gone an hour later, or 3 hours later, whatever it is. There's a handful of areas where it's low and it'll keep the water, but most of it will go up.
But the canyons is not a big concern of the high buildings, the tall buildings.
No, we think that we will go and have a real – it's part of our plan is to go to every single construction site and just get as many things off the roof and as possible and tie it all down. There's always some stuff that blows, but fundamentally that the big buildings should be able to handle it. There can be some wind damage. If you go to places like the Rockaways or some parts of Staten Island or City Island – there are smaller homes that are low to the water, and they can have some wind damage, and it'll be tragic, but it won't be big numbers, we don't think. But it's the water. If the storm hits us, it isn't so bad. If the storm hits central New Jersey, that's what's worse for us.
When the tidal surge
comes up.
Because
it'll take the surge right up the harbor and do the most damage. But it depends what time of the day it gets here. And
a lot of variables.
Bruno has done a great service to the city, and he's got a great plan. Now, keep in mind, this is exactly the reverse plan. Then what would you do in the case of bioterrorism or something? Now, it's knowing it. So Tom Frieden, the health commissioner, we measure 60,000 data points a day. To see, because spotting bioterrorism
you
is hard.
Know, right?
People are checking the hospitals and what diseases. Pharmacies, what they're selling. Are they starting to sell things for upset stomachs all of a sudden in a place? I mean, these are the kinds of things. But in the case of some of those other things, you might not want to evacuate people. You might want to convince people to not move around.
Because it's going to go someplace
right,
else and you don't want them to move in
so
that
it's
direction.
Exactly. So, you know, but hurricanes, in the context of planning, are relatively simple. You want to move people out. We know where we're taking them. We'll have supplies there, food, water, for all different religions as well. You have to make sure that we have halal food and kosher food. John, you have to do this.
Sure.
I think there'll always be something we forgot, but this guy's done a great job and he's got a great staff, and he has worked in the police and fire and Department of Transportation and health. All these agencies have really kicked in, and it'll work.
Hopefully Mother Nature –
hopefully we won't need it.
Exactly. Won't have to test us. 1-800-848-WABC is our telephone number. When we come back, it'll be your chance to talk with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. If you've got the question, give us a call. 1-800-848-WABC. All right. Well, we've got a couple of minutes left here, and it's your turn. 1-800-848-WABC to talk with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And we got Bill from Long Island. Been real patient. Bill, go ahead. You've got the mayor.
Mr. Mayor.
Hi, Bill.
Honorable host and distinguished panel. The great WABC audience. Gentlemen, with 30% of America's prisons filled with illegal invaders, plus 35% of the illegals getting welfare benefits courtesy of the U.S. taxpayer.
Bill, with all due respect, get to the question for Tom.
Okay, guys. This, to me, and there's a lot of people who feel the same way I do, the only answer to this is mass deportations. Now, I know, Mr. Mayor, you're at a political difficulty in New York City to come out how you truly feel about this. But you know what? Western culture is at stake, and a lot of American people are behind us now, and I think it's going to be something that's...
Okay, Bill, look, number one, most undocumenteds don't get any benefits whatsoever. You have to be a citizen to get federal benefits, and even state and city programs use a lot of federal money, so they get very few benefits. A lot of them do pay taxes. Net-net, every study's shown that they contribute to... that this is not true that in the prisons they're all undocumented. There are some, but... fundamentally, if they get, you know, if you get arrested, we find out your status, you get deported. So you may go to jail first, but that's just not true. If people say, you know, we don't need undocumented. The states with the highest number of percentage-wise of undocumented have the highest growth. If you think about it, in the Southwest and the South, the growth is higher than the Northeast, and that's where the preponderance of
undocumented. As you know, though, in
are.
Europe, they're finding that they've got a huge problem that is similar.
Right. And Europe does. The difference is, and Europe's going to have to face this, because without a whole bunch of people coming in from other countries, from the less developed countries, all the European economies would crater even faster than ours. Their birth rates are even lower than ours. So they may complain about it, but they couldn't do without it. And
all right.
So let's go to Melvin.
Melvin, go ahead. You got the mayor. Go ahead.
Oh, Mr. Mayor, this
Hi.
Is Mel from New Hope. I've worked in the city for many, many years. A pleasure to speak to you.
Question, Melvin. What is it?
Okay, question. How come the parochial schools in New York City, the yeshivas and the Catholic schools, and I called up several for each, allow cell phones to come into the school? They're not stored in lockers. They're in the backpacks all day. They have no problem whatsoever with it. It's a none.
Melvin, I don't know whether they do or they don't. I don't run the yeshivas or the Catholic schools.
City Council wants the cell phones in school.
Well, I think their law is that they want to pass, which is about as you got to really question what's going on here. Pandering to a handful of vocal parents and trying to destroy the education of our children is an outrage. But regardless, if their law talks about cell phones before and after school, you can do that. The school does not have the facilities or the manpower to store cell phones. We're not going to allow them in schools. And I don't know whether the yeshivas or Catholic schools, maybe they have a better shot at keeping the kids from using them over there, but no reputable educator wants to have the kids on looking at movies on their cell phones, text messaging, talking to people on the phones.
Teachers with cell phones in the classroom?
Hopefully the adults. The teachers have them in their pocketbooks or pockets, and they don't use them. Come on, that's not the same thing. Let's get serious.
Well, all right, we're out of time, Mr. Mayor. We'll hook up next Friday.
Stay warm, stay cool. Happy Father's Day. Drink a lot and check in on any of the elderly.
Okay, good suggestions there. Always a pleasure, sir, to see you. Look forward to next week. Stick around, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you will. Got some good conversation with my friend Chris Wallace. Straight ahead at 77 W.